What's up, Internet, and welcome to episode 88 of Radio Radar. I'm Hollander Cooper, and here with me is...
Henry Gilbert.
Lorenzo Valoria.
Lucas Sullivan.
And towing up the end of the line, Ryan Teltman.
Henry, you don't have to fight for first place for the next few weeks.
That's true, because I'm lucky that Tom Magrino became a father.
Yay!
Big Daddy Tom.
Oh, don't say that like that.
Big Daddy Tom.
Oh, wait, no, this is the correct sound effect. Say again what happened with Tom.
Tom Magrino had a baby.
Achievement unlocked.
Aww. Yeah, it was. Well, we knew it. We knew a baby was on the way, but it came out of nowhere, like Sophia.
Like way out of nowhere. Where did that baby come from? Oh, gross! Come on.
Water breaking.
We were at that morning meeting, and then which we thought was just to discuss E3 plans, and then Sophia goes, "So Tom had a baby last night at 5 a.m." I was like, "What?"
Yep. So
also that the labor was so fast. It was
yes.
4 hours.
He did a great job.
Tom himself birthed it. Yeah. It was born from his loins.
He's like a seahorse.
He kind of looks like a seahorse.
I said that very strangely. I was trying to make a joke that Tom had the baby himself. I'm bad.
You're
at jokes.
Just yeah. Disgusting, Ryan.
I'm sorry.
I'm saying really he supported his wife.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, episode 88, Tom's going to be out for the next few weeks dealing with being a father. He'll come back a changed man.
You know, I'm really excited for the episode that he's back on, and he's just like, you know, giving us sagely advice.
Yeah, we're gonna make some kind of joke about something that beforehand he totally would have been on board with, and he's going to be like, guys, I don't know.
When you said the episode he comes back on, I automatically imagined that we were in a sitcom, and... He came in and he's like, hey, Tom, what's up? We know his name. So all right, let's move on. Okay.
So that's it for the first segment of Tom having a baby. No, episode 88, we're going to jump into the top 7 weirdest celebrity cameos and roles in games.
Okay, which Henry will have to do an impression for each celebrity.
That's right. Starting with...
Oh, man.
Number 7.
Peter Sable, who made the sound effects. Thank you for sending us perfect ones. I don't even have to fucking touch the soundboard.
Oh, Peter, you're a champion of the men. Oh, champion of men.
Don't be sexist.
Stop.
Champion of the men.
You gotta be careful of your words.
Number 7.
Quentin Tarantino in an FMV game, specifically a 1996 game called Steven Spielberg's Director Chair.
Is it worth playing the YouTube clip of him talking about it?
Sure. Though
an actor, you know, and
yeah, it's right after Jennifer Aniston, who's also in the game.
In acting in this interactive project, one of the things that I realized as I was, you know, going over the script and getting prepared was, oh my God, I actually have an opportunity that I don't know anybody who's ever had this opportunity before. While you're acting, you're doing two completely different sides of two completely different movies all at the same time. You know, we do the scene and we do it real and we do it serious and it's played for dramatic effect. Then you do it again in this crazy, wild comedy way. And you're moving back and forth between the two all during the course of the day as you're shooting the movie.
Yeah.
Here.
Huh.
Well, you want an impression of his?
Yeah.
Hey.
Give a little context first and then do the impression.
All right, so Quentin Tarantino is one of my favorite film directors. I don't know if you guys how many fans they have in the room with me.
He's pretty cool.
But
he's hit or miss for me. Mostly miss, I gotta say.
Really? Mostly hit.
Yeah, I have really loved it, at the very least liked all of his films. And I think he's a great writer and director, but he loves acting, and he's really bad at it.
He's so... There have been movies where he's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, when he's in his own movies, like, him in Pulp Fiction, for me, it's like, he's okay, because he just comes across as, like, an insufferable ass, which is what he's supposed to be doing. But when he shows up in other people's movies...
You know, I'm going to express some very unpopular opinion right now and say, I didn't think Reservoir Dogs was very good, and I did not think Pulp Fiction was very good.
Well, you're pretty wrong.
It's an unpopular opinion. If you would have tweeted that, Turtle Rock would have fired you.
And I also just cannot get into Kill Bill at all.
Man, you are. Meanwhile, you're coming in every day being like, watch another 7 episodes of DBZ. I don't know. There's not as much filler as Zarbon. You guys talk about.
But no, I actually enjoy his more recent stuff more than I did any of his previous
Django
movies.
Unchained.
Yeah, I think Bastards. Starting around... I liked Inglourious Basterds a lot.
No, it's just called...
And I think that was his first movie where I was like, yeah, I actually really enjoyed that one. So,
well, maybe you're finally mature enough to appreciate it.
I like the Django. The Django was good.
But though, Django has one of his worst acting roles ever.
It is
like,
pretty bad.
I think he did it just as like an F you to people who says he's a bad actor. He's like, well, what if I did it with an Australian accent? Yeah.
He's like, you haven't begun to see how bad of an actor I can be, folks.
Well, he has like a Valley Girl accent. I mean, that's like... And, you know, right, like, it's like this.
Guys, I'm sorry to take us off track for a second.
Are you about to pull a Tom Agrino?
Why are you holding the mic like that?
Because I can't hear my own voice, and I question if my mic is on.
It's on.
We can see it on the screen. What headphones do you have? What color headphones?
I have blue headphones on right now.
Let's just do a sound test in the middle of the podcast.
I hear everyone else,
but
my voice is
not changing. You going to do?
So, we're talking earlier about
how you're going full Tom Agrino right now and interrupting the podcast to talk about something that's a conversation that begun and ended before the podcast.
But I couldn't get my phone to work until now. So we played Castle Shikigami 2 on Game Bunker, rest in peace. And one of the lines we did not encounter is from Kim, who says, "I accept. I'm Kim of two homes and seven moms."
What?
I don't know what that means.
Is that a Korean stereotype that they have seven moms?
I don't even know.
He anyway. Wants to see my body.
That's something I liked in Castle Shikigami, to see a Japanese stereotype of Korean people then localized poorly into English. Like
the perfect storm.
But I'll give it anyway. Quentin Tarantino is a terrible actor. And during the time after Pulp Fiction, he could do anything he wanted, basically. He's like, I'm the director of Pulp Fiction. Everybody loves me. I'm going to act in all this crap. Like, he wrote From Dusk Till Dawn so he could act next
to
George Clooney.
So, real talk, he is fucking perfect in From Dusk Till Dawn.
He's a total creep.
He's like, playing a creepy rapist.
Yes.
It's basically his role.
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah. Who loves to feel people's teeth.
Like he's just playing.
That is really
he's
weird.
Playing the stereotype of Quentin Tarantino.
From Dusk Till Dawn is a really stupid movie, but I love
them.
It.
It's
love
so good.
But real quick, let's talk a little bit about his role in the FMV game, since that's what this list is
right,
about.
That was all set up to he could do whatever he wanted, and one of the things he chose to do was appear in Spielberg's video game, which was one of the first games by DreamWorks. When DreamWorks came together, it was supposed to be, this is the studio of the future. We're going to have internet projects. We're going to have video game projects, not just movies or TV shows. Mm. And so this was the game where you got to be Steven Spielberg and direct your own film, which really meant you got to put in order different FMV sequences and then click around in a very bad point-and-click world. Mm. And so part of the FMV sequence was you were cutting together a film and directing, which is watching different scenes from a film and then picking which type of acting you wanted. And Quentin Tarantino, Jennifer Aniston, and some other people appeared in those scenes. And so you see these clips of, like, they must have been filming in, like, an abandoned jail, and they were just, like, put Quentin Tarantino in, like, one of the worst, like, most obvious prisoner costumes they could find, and then told him, like, just go crazy. And there's these shots of him just, like, jumping on the bars and, like, shaking him, like, hey, let me out of here, kind of thing. It's so lame. But because nobody remembered, like, it's a lost PC game. Like, it was barely famous at the time. Like, nobody really remembers that he was in it.
You know, one of my favorite parts about just hearing him talk just then is one of the things I always find very interesting to hear actors talk about, like if I'm listening to NPR and they're interviewing an actor or actress and they're talking about the act of acting, and it's just really like, yeah, you're just, you know, you're so into the scene, you're just it's such a special experience. And for him to hear Quentin Tarantino say, like, yeah, it's just, you know, what a unique project. You're doing these two, you're two different people at the same time. Just like, man, shut up.
Yes, yeah. Well, he loves to talk. He's just, yeah. He cannot stop talking. But anyway, yeah, that's why all his film scripts just read like him talking through different people all the time. That's why I love about him, too. Like, there's no reason in Kill Bill. Like, it's interesting to me that Bill is a big comic book buff and he wants to wax philosophically about Superman. But that's really just a thing Quentin Tarantino thought about
no
while high.
It makes no sense for the character.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino just got high one time and was like, you know what I think about Superman? And then just put it in Bill's mouth.
He probably wrote it like 7 years ago and was like, eventually a character's going to say this. And then he's like, old assassin? That's the guy. Yeah. All right, time for your impression.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Let's see. Okay.
Shoot every motherfucking last one of you.
I know my coffee's good, okay, Jules? That's because I buy the good coffee. If I let Bonnie buy the coffee, she buys shit, okay?
Woo!
Oh, that was really good.
So,
that was really good.
Oh, boy. I think that might be my best impression for this list.
Well, the good news is you got to do 6 other impressions, regardless of the quality. Yeah, starting with...
Number 6.
Yeah, it's Tina Fey of 30 Rock, and she appeared in a pinball game from the mid-90s called Medieval Madness.
That's a good one.
Now, this just feels like a plot from 30 Rock, but this really happened. So Williams pinball machines, whatever, they're based in Chicago. That's I think a lot of pinball amusement games development was based in Chicago. That's where Midway was based, and I think that's still where Mortal Kombat is based out of. But anyway, so meanwhile, Tina Fey is a member. Like, Chicago has a huge improv comedy scene, starting with Second City and the Annoyance Theater and Improv Olympics. All these things everybody knows about improv comedy.
No, of course.
And Tina Fey was and Tina Fey was a member of it. And so to make ends meet in between doing comedy for no money, she just was a local actor that got hired to do pinball voices. As were for the same game was Scott Adsid, the producer Pete Horchmeyer from 30 Rock as well.
Okay, the balding guy.
Yeah, the balding guy.
I have the outtakes clip. Yeah, is that good to play?
Yeah. And then I have some outtakes. I actually went through some of the sessions. I actually saved all the DAT tapes from all that stuff. And there's some things that obviously never got into the game that were kind of funny.
Not now. I have a headache.
This isn't right.
Not now.
I don't think.
I have third-degree burns all up and down my body.
That is her.
There was a dragon there and there was fire.
I mean, the guy isn't.
Is she all the princesses?
No, she's two of them.
Right, and then this one.
Ooh, your sword is so sharp!
And then this is Tina as the old lady. I guess we only got 2 of these in for the game, but there's a bunch of them that she did that I thought were pretty hilarious.
Run them through! I'll bet 4 chickens on Sir Holstein!
What?
Stick it to him! Come on, sirloin of beef! Poke his eyes out! Yeah, get him!
All right, so there's Tina Fey in a pinball game. You might be right about the first one not being her, but if she did do two characters, I may
it
have been.
Said, both. When I looked it up, it said she did 2 different characters.
I think she did there was like Danish or whatever.
I know there was a... I almost said a Jewish princess, but I really meant was a princess who is Jewish.
Oh, a Jewish American princess.
And then when you say that, the abbreviation of that I've heard people say, I'm like, that's racist for like 2 races.
Yeah.
It's really, but I didn't hear that until I met like East Coast people, because that was just not a phrase to, anyway, let's get out of that. But, all right, a Tina Fey impression just to end this one.
Hold on, I got to get a sound effect.
If I can find one. You got to get the 30 Rock. Okay.
Why is this? This is the long version? There's a long... Why is there a long version to this?
All right. Okay. Snorf! Ah, snurd! Flurg! 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 Yeah, that's what she said.
All right, there we go. There's your Henry Gilbert Tina Fey impression. Let's move on to...
Number 5.
The fact that you're going to have to do an impression for this makes no sense, but I'm really excited.
Henry, I think first you have to address a lot of the people that said, that's not a cameo.
We had to change. All right, we did roles and cameos. I should have had it be celebrities you didn't know were involved in the games. Maybe that would have been more clear. But all right, look, yeah, fine. It's not a cameo. Bono didn't appear in these games. Okay, fine. Bono didn't appear in games until he was in like some music games. I forget which, but
no one knows which games we're talking about. Right?
The point of it is that Bono partially financed the Mercenaries games and Mass Effect, and I think that's interesting.
What's your favorite U2 song?
Gee, that is a tough one. Let's say In the Name of Love.
All right, just you can keep going. I was just curious.
All right, but anyway, yeah. So Bono was a member of a group called Elevation Partners, which was just this big media company that was going to finance a lot of different media. And it was even named after a U2 song, which I think is like so fucking smug. But that is like total Bono of just like, Bono is a great humanitarian. He seems like a cool guy, but he also just seems like so full of himself. It's like, get over yourself, Bono.
So he was involved in those games.
Mm-hmm. Well, so he was part of the group. They were financing a lot of things, and Elevation bought two big independent developers. They bought BioWare and Pandemic, and they were like, we brought them together to make the most powerful independent developer in the world. And this was 2005. But and they worked with them through the creation of Mass Effect and Mercenaries as well. And that actually got Bono in a lot of trouble because that he probably didn't expect, which was Mercenaries 2. Part of the plot of it was going to Venezuela and killing the president of Venezuela. They didn't say it was Hugo Chavez, but pretty much was supposed to be him. And so, like, some Venezuelan groups, like, protested this, and they said, this game needs to be canceled. And then they find out Bono's involved, and they're like, hey, Bono, Mr. Humanitarian, cancel this game. It was probably a headache he did not anticipate. And I don't think it is I don't think it's a coincidence that they sold off, Elevation sold off Pandemic and BioWare to EA just a couple years, like a year or two later. So,
do they still own any game-related
properties? I think they own some independent group or like some much smaller places, but I think they're out of that world now. And then poor Pandemic got to launch one more game and then got shut down.
Gone. All right, you ready for your Bono impression? I've chosen one I want you to do.
Okay. One man come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come he to justify. One man to overthrow. In the name of love. What more in the name of love? In the name of love.
Beautiful, yes. Beautiful. Yeah, I was personally hoping for the sweetest thing, but that's okay.
The sweetest thing. You need to care about AIDS. I'm Bono. That's what I just
number four.
You've got to try.
Okay. All right.
That's your cue.
Hayden Panettiere was Kyrie in Kingdom Hearts, which some people also were like, yeah, I knew this happened, or this isn't a cameo, which fine, yes, it wasn't a cameo. But like treating her like she's the lead in the game, I bet she had, like, out of all the characters who say lines in Kingdom Hearts, I bet she was the 20th, like, at best. Like,
I mean, you got
definitely lower than Donald and Goofy.
Yes.
Yeah, you got Sora, Riku, Donald, Goofy. And then I bet Mickey said more stuff.
I doubt that. No, Mickey maybe doesn't say shit.
Well,
in
later
flips
ones, Mickey said a lot of stuff. But anyway, she played Kyrie, the love interest from that. And I think she was just one of the Disney kids that got hired to it. They just hired a bunch of different Disney kids to do voices.
Oh, she was a Mouseketeer?
Well, she worked on Disney films. Like, she starred in Remember the Titans. Ah. She was.
Oh, yeah. She was a little girl.
She was the little girl that was the daughter of the assistant coach who lost the job to Denzel Washington. But then she started to befriend him, and they were all breaking racial barriers together.
Hold on, I have an audio clip.
Together people in the community.
I have an audio clip that may or may not be worthless.
Okay.
Kyrie, wait up!
That was Riku?
No.
Kyrie, is a princess in Kingdom Hearts 2, and she's a very sweet
Time out. Kyrie's not a fucking princess.
They yell at me and tell me I have to make my voice more princess. Princess, lighten the voice, Hayden. Please raise it a few octaves. He's far away, but I know we'll see him again. This letter is where it starts. I know it.
There you go. There's Hayden Petrovan. Also, was she a princess in that game?
I think she got kidnapped, so I think she technically is.
I don't
a
think that's something that defines if being
you
a
get
princess.
No, but I mean the heart.
Listen, I know where you are. You've kidnapped my princess. Look, I have a very select set of skills.
This involves deconstructing the Kingdom Hearts plot in a way I was not prepared for. But Kingdom Hearts, I believe the plot of the Heartless is to kidnap the princesses of each world. So within her world, I think Kyrie is a princess.
I think you have the right of it.
But it's just kind of a low-scale one. I feel like this will definitely be corrected by somebody, but I'm just saying in the bare-bones version of it, I think she is technically a princess.
All right, I just looked up. She is apparently Princess of Heart.
Okay. Mm. All right. There. But anyway, so the
seven princesses of Heart. There are seven princesses. There are maidens with hearts of pure light, devoid of darkness. They are called princesses due to whoever can gather them and summon the final keyhole.
Ew.
That's
poor word.
Giving the
dirty
person access to the Kingdom Hearts. So she's basically a princess. So here are the seven princesses of hearts. Kyrie.
Princess
Alice.
Jasmine.
Snow White. Jasmine.
Belle.
You gonna let him say it?
Ariel?
No, Ariel is not one.
What?
Cinderella, and there's one more.
Sleeping Beauty.
Boom!
Lady Aurora.
Well, it's not Ariel because you hang out with Ariel in the game. She hasn't been kidnapped.
So you win.
She's the only non-Disney princess.
What, Kyrie? Yeah.
Wait, in the seven princesses of heart.
It's a sigh?
One does not belong.
The last interesting thing about this was just that Hayden played her in the first two games and then took off a couple games because I like to think she was busy with Heroes, and then after Heroes got canceled, then she came back.
Hey man, she's on Scream 4. She's fucking awesome in Scream 4.
Is she?
Yeah.
Save the cheerleader, save the world.
But she's also in she's now on another TV show like that's it's about Nashville, that's what it is. About country music.
You don't hear me say please.
Here, Henry, this is what you can do instead of an impression.
Is the way that you're making me feel tonight. Hard to let it go.
Did you Utada Hikaru, she had an interesting life. That like her mother was a famous Enka singer, like and released songs all over the world, and that like she's Japanese, but she grew up a lot of her youth in New York. Like she's fully bilingual, like just grew up in both, and so like she's released songs in both languages. That
I wonder what she's doing.
The first person, by the way, by the end of next week, whoever has sent us the best, 3-second soundbite for Henry Fact will be sent something in the mail. We need something to acknowledge when these great moments happen.
Yes. Number three.
All right, number three is Michael Fassbender the star of, I guess the X-Men movies would be what he's probably most famous for with our audience. Just he's the newer
First Class.
Magneto.
Yeah. Days of Future Past.
Yeah, and Days of Future Past and First Class. He also has had some very intense acting films and Oscar-nominated roles in the films Shame and 12 Years a Slave.
And the most intense role he had playing an android in Prometheus.
And he is my girlfriend's love interest or love fantasy interest.
I thought that was
Patton Oswalt.
It's Patton Oswalt, it's Michael Fassbender, and it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah, those are the three men
JGL.
Where... Yeah, those are the three men where should the opportunity arise.
You know, I noticed they're all white.
I don't know. Cindy's weird. She likes only pasty white men. And that's
So she those are her three that if the opportunity arises.
Yeah,
did you ever tell her that your three are all in this room right now?
She doesn't know that yet. No.
But so Fassbender, before he got kind of famous, he was a voice in Fable 3. He was Evil King Logan, I believe his name was, who you dethrone, that you don't kill, he gets away.
And your most valuable asset.
The character I play in Fable 3 is Logan, who is the king of Albion.
This is my Albion. Its people will do as I say, or they will die. Its future will be as I decree, or it will end.
How the shit is he not in Game of Thrones yet?
He's too big for Game of Thrones now, I think, really. Like, they got Sean Bean.
Is that a
joke
about Peter Dinklage, man? That is not cool.
No, I mean, Sean Bean was like the biggest star they got, and that was just kill him. I shouldn't have said that. You guys need to look this up on the YouTube that, like, there was this video that pointed out that Sean Bean, more than any major actor, gets killed in every
I saw that
film.
Video.
Who is Sean Bean? He's in?
He's
Eddard Stark.
Stark.
Like a 5-year-old spoiler right now for the show. But anyway, that he, like, in every movie, like, he's the only guy that dies in Lord of the Rings. Like, he gets.
He's literally the only, one of the only characters in the Fellowship that
Fuganda.
Dies.
But he's, like, 12. But yeah, it's just like 14 scenes in a row of him just getting murdered over and over again.
Which is why when they announced the casting, people who read the books were just like, "Really? It's not even going to be a surprise when it happens."
Yeah. Yes. But anyway, yeah, Fassbender's awesome. I think now he's just too big for game roles.
I mean, he's producing and starring in the Assassin's Creed movie.
Okay, that's true. He is soon to he really wants to make the Assassin's Creed film, apparently, which is surprising to
me. Though I also read that he really wants to make it. Never played the games. Not sure exactly about the games, but he really wants to make this movie.
Is he just looking to just get rich like Hugh Jackman does with directing or producing and starring in the Wolverine movies? I gotta think that's part of it. But also, like, Fable 3, I think he got lost in the mix because he hadn't become a big star yet, and that film, that game, Fable 3, has, like, a cavalcade of British stars in it, like, including John Cleese and Ben Kingsley, like, major British names. And so Fassbender's British-German butt just got looked over in the whole thing. Like,
booty.
Yeah, he was awesome in Inglourious Basterds, too. Like, that was the first time I ever noticed him.
So here's the most updated on the movie. It's been rewritten. It no longer has anything to do with Ezio, Desmond, or any of the characters from the games. It's rumored to be a Da Vinci Code-style thriller with very little action or parkour scenes whatsoever.
What? But
so I think it sounds like it's just going to be about, like, Assassin's Creed is going to be about people uncovering the secrets behind the Assassin's Creed universe, but not actually being assassins or Templars.
Well, I mean, like, totally, those games ripped off the Da Vinci Code. Like, it had the same type of massive conspiracies. And even, I mean, the Knights of Templar are just in, not the Da Vinci Code made of Knights of Templar. It was just taken from the same knowledge base as that. But still, like, Assassin's Creed is stabbing people. Like, that's what it's all about.
Well, jumping off of rooftops.
You know, I think there's also the risk, too, that it could come across just as super cheesy. Like, maybe if it was, like, Bourne level awesomeness or something. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. But this is also an interesting, I think, angle for it.
They should just do a mix. Make it like these people find a guy who is an assassin, and he's like, I need the help from some random scrappy 20-somethings who want to investigate a mystery. Basically remake Thor, except except instead of it being an Asgardian, it's just an assassin. With Natalie Portman.
I just hope it's not as bad as the Prince of Persia film. That really wasn't very good.
I still haven't seen that.
Like, there have been way worse video game films, but this is, like, it's the most expensive video game film ever made, I think. And like, it looks expensive, but then, I mean, you see the... It looks very pricey, like, as expensive as a Pirates of the Caribbean film is, but then it has no substance or fun to it. Like, it's just so empty.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
And now for the Fassbender imitation.
Number.
Charles. Charles, get out of here. Why are you hiding your mutant side?
Number two. Ray. Huh?
I'm going to try to move this with my... No.
Do I need to play number two again?
No, no.
I'll do it,
That
Hank.
Scene where he killed Kevin Bacon was so awesome in First Class. That was the best part.
Spoiler alert. Where are spoilers all over the place?
Yeah.
Well, we start with a spoiler alert for at the start of this podcast, right? There's anyway. All right. Henry Rollins wrestled in Def Jam Fight for New York. Now,
who's
Henry
Rollins?
Is everybody in the room aware of Henry Rollins?
No.
No.
Yes.
Jeez. Please fill us in.
All right. So, you guys know punk music, right?
Yes.
Sure.
What is a punk band to you? Like,
name a few.
Rancid.
Okay.
Blink 182.
Boo. That is the worst.
Suicide Machines.
Stone Temple Pilots.
What?
Whoa.
I was just throwing something out there.
Like Sex Pistols, Ramones, stuff like that. Well, one of the other, like, you know, foundations of the hardcore punk music is Black Flag.
Oh, yes.
They were a big-time group. You'll see people still wearing Black Flag shirts today.
Assassin's Creed.
And one of the... and one of the lead singers, and I would say the most famous lead singer of Black Flag, is Henry Rollins, who was just this super intense guy who usually just sings in biker shorts and just screams into a microphone the whole time.
I don't think this is him.
Look up Black Flag Action.
Black Flag Action?
Yeah, the song Action. That's my favorite Black Flag song. But yeah, Henry Rollins was just, he was a super intense guy, like in just a lean, mean punk machine. And then after Black Flag broke up, like he was still doing stuff like the Rollins Band.
For the record, when I searched Black Flag Action, the entire page is Assassin's Creed Black Flag action figures.
But the, but yeah, he also became like a very famous like speaker. Like he has done a lot of spoken word albums and like talks a lot about social justice and human rights, all this stuff. He's a really cool guy. But then it seemed very weird that out of all places for him to appear in a video game, he appeared. And he also was an actor too. Like he appeared in Def Jam Fight for New York, the sequel to the Def Jam Pro Wrestling game, then Def Jam Vendetta,
which is all rappers, not punk.
Yeah,
artists.
The Def Jam label with all their rapping people, their rappers. Like they decided they would make a wrestling game starring all of them. So you have the early 2000s crop of popular rappers. You have Method Man,
Ludacris,
Redman.
I spell the word ludicrous incorrectly about 75% of the time because I spell it
ludicrous.
Like, yeah,
yeah.
Ghostface Killah.
Fat Joe was in it too.
Hey man, he's trying.
In the sequel.
Come brush your shoulders off. Yeah, he was in Fight for New York. No, yeah, but then out of all those people, then here comes like Henry Rollins just shows up, who's not like
hey guys.
Who's not the same generation as them or like the same music style or all that. I mean, he's super cool, like he's a cool guy, like. But it was a very weird choice. So though he actually looks like the toughest of all the guys who were in it too. Like he
could take them in a fight.
I don't want to say that, but in a pro wrestling match, who knows? But yeah, so it was just so strange to see him show up. And then the one other thing is that Henry Rollins like appeared in. He was also the voice of Mace Griffin Bounty Hunter.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jeez, I remember that game.
Yeah, that
I remember
game was
ads
awful.
For that game that had like the little red visor you put to your eye. That was his thing, Mace Griffin.
There's also a really cool interview with him with RuPaul. Like RuPaul. I've like interviewed him in a car. It was sort of like that Jerry Seinfeld show, Coffee.
Before that became a thing.
But it's yeah. So Henry Rollins is cool, but I did not expect for him to show up in the Def Jam Pro Wrestling game.
And
now for the impression.
Hey, I'm Henry Rollins. Hey, I'm Henry Rollins. Stand up for gay rights.
Like, I love any impression that begins with somebody loudly proclaiming their own name.
Yes. Okay, here's where you probably know Henry Rollins from. Did you see Jackass 2?
Yes.
Or it was Jackass 1, I forget which. Do you remember when Steve-O got a tattoo on a dune buggy?
Yes, I do.
Henry Rollins was the driver in that episode. Henry Rollins was driving the dune buggy as the tattoo artist in the back was giving him a tattoo.
That sounded like a Henry Rollins impression.
I feel like I've really dominated this top seven conversation.
You wrote it.
Yeah. All right, last one is Steve Carell was a commentator for Outlaw Golf. So the Outlaw Golf games, like, they get a bad rap, but, I mean, they were just, they were stupid fun. Like, that's all they were supposed to be, just some T-rated silliness of just playing golf with rednecks and strippers and all that stuff.
Convicts.
From the Big Apple, where she splits her time between PhD studies in molecular biology at Columbia University and entertaining foreign businessmen in the champagne room at the Pink Flamingo, please welcome sultry Summer and her equally ample caddy, Autumn. Remember, gentlemen, after the game, these ladies will be available for autographs and lap dances. Bring plenty of singles.
They're like, he didn't write that shit. He just said it. Those are the most of the clips I could find of, like, when people were doing Let's Plays of Outlaw Golf, for some reason they only wanted to play as a stripper and her girlfriend. I don't get it. But, so Steve Carell, the developers of Outlaw Golf, they're based in New York, and at the time, Steve Carell was not famous. Like, he was just, well, I mean, he was relatively famous. He was a reporter on The Daily Show, just doing bits every week or so, and they just hired him to say a bunch of lines for the show and or for their game and just announce it. And same with Stephen Colbert actually did one for Outlaw Tennis as well. Meanwhile, Outlaw Golf 2 got the voice of Dave Attell, the comedian Dave Attell, if you know him. But
Insomnia.
But yeah, I thought it was nice, and it's the type of thing you'd never get him back for it. Like, he would never come back again. But but he does a good enough job with the words written for him. Like, it's just corny dialogue with just what was considered extreme jokes in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Or sexy MTV-style jokes. This isn't your grandfather's golf game. That's what I would have said.
Yeah, what all about right. that Steve Carell impression?
All right, let's see here. What does he? I'm trying to think of a good line of his. Like, I was gonna do an Anchorman line, but
I mean, you still can.
Okay. let's see. I eat a brick. Oh, why? Why is he dead? Brick, you're not dead. Why? What? My legs.
So many scenes all wrapped up into one.
Are you a vampire? All right, so that's it for the top seven weirdest celebrity roles and cameos in gaming history. You can check out a new top seven every week on GamesRadar.com, and next week's has to do with boobs, butts, and dongers. All the best parts of people. So yeah, you can check that out, written by Games Radar's newest employee.
What?
Ooh. Huh? We'll be right back.
Radio Radar is brought to you in part by Audible.com, where you can download audiobooks like Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter, and Ready Player One. Download a free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/gamesradar.
Welcome back to the second segment of episode 88 of Radio Radar. Let's jump into the news, shall we? Epic announced a new Unreal tournament is being developed.
Woohoo!
Sort of. Lucas, should people be excited?
Okay, so this is a mostly good thing. But as you and Dave Houghton pointed out, it is not totally altruistic. So Epic is bringing back...
It is a business.
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean. They're bringing back Unreal Tournament, but there's nothing to show for it right now. They literally said during the announcement, like, we're going to start work on it today. There's nothing to show you right now.
Wow.
And the big thing they announced is that it will be free. Not free to play, fully free. And that's kind of confusing at
first. Yes,
yeah. But really what this is a vehicle to get Unreal 4 in the hands of more people, more developers specifically. Because right now, Unreal Engine 4 is kind of not floundering, but no one's really talking about it. Dave made a good comparison of Unreal Engine 3 had Gears of War, and then everybody took notice of it, mm-hmm. and it went into mainstream use.
Well, yeah, because Gears of War was the... It came out the Christmas after the... The holiday season after it came, after the 360 came out, and it was the first game in which you went like, wow, yeah, look at that.
Oh, my God.
This is what Unreal 3 can do? Holy shit.
And Unreal 4 doesn't have that game yet?
Well, because they sold off Gears, and, like, they yeah, they're not making it. They aren't making it to have that game. But.
Exactly. And the thing is, so they announced... when was that, Coop, that you saw...
It was during GDC.
Okay.
So mid-March.
In mid-March, they said, oh, yeah, we're not working on Unreal Tournament. And a lot of people...
We're not working on any game in the Unreal franchise, either.
And everyone had a collective, like, oh, man, like, I really wanted Unreal Tournament 4. Like, it should be happening right now. And Epic Games, without having a big flagship game to show off the engine, were probably like, oh, well, if everyone wants this and we need something to show it off, why not bring it back? The way this is going to work is it's kind of like Kickstarter in that they're working with the community, but it's almost like the community is doing a lot of the work for them. Mm-hmm. Coop was saying a good point of like, it's kind of like a fan remake that's sanctioned by the license owners.
Yeah, think about how many times somebody is like, oh, well, I'm going to remake Chrono Trigger in 3D. It's called Chrono Reborn. And then they release screenshots, and then Square's like, we're shutting you down, obviously. Yeah. And if somebody was to say, like, we're making Unreal Tournament for ourselves, usually the company would be like, no, you're not. That's not something you're doing. But in this case, Epic is basically saying, like,
please
hey,
do.
We are making a new Unreal Tournament. And by making, I mean, we'll do the paperwork. You guys make it. And then no one, like, we're not going to pay you, but no one will pay for anything. Apparently, you are going to be able to monetize mods.
Yeah.
And stuff.
There's a marketplace where you can sell, like...
maps and mods and
stuff.
Yeah,
that's maybe.
Potentially.
Probably.
But the majority of stuff will be free because no one should charge anything. It may just be, like, if you make an Unreal Tournament thing and somebody says, like, oh, I can take these pieces you've made and make my own shooter on it, you could then sell it.
And I think this could work because Team Fortress has a kind of similar system going on right now where the Steam Workshop is pretty much the only thing providing the game with new weapons and hats, but enough users are interested enough to make content and basically partner with Valve to sell it in the game. So if Epic Games can do something similar to that, then it could be a great... rebirth for the series.
Hasn't Valve talked up one of those success stories of like the guy who quit his job just to make Team Fortress hats because he makes enough money off of it or something?
Yeah, there's a lot of success. It's more common, I think, and with Dota 2 has the same thing. A lot of people just start doing it as a fun hobby and then they say, oh, this is actually profitable.
Yeah, you know, I think this is interesting that it's this transformation of Unreal, like, or of Epic, I mean. The company it was the Gears company for such a long time. First it was the Unreal Tournament company, then it became the Gears company for like the last 5 years, and now they've sold off Gears. They lost most of their team internally, and it's like 49% owned by Tencent. Like,
it's such a weird thing where it's like they were the Unreal Tournament company until they just stopped making Unreal Tournament games. And then they were the Gears of War company until they just... I feel like they're afraid of being kind of locked into being the company that makes blank, so much so that they're willing to burn down their franchises.
Well, the Unreal Tournament 3 was just not even close to the originals.
Well, Tencent wants to... I think they're more interested in making money off the engine, and now they're just making it as open as possible to use that engine.
Like, yeah, this new Unreal Tournament is kind of like a gateway to Unreal Engine 4 for a lot of people.
Well, and like, Cooper, the thing you were at GDC, didn't they talk about how it was sort of a free-to-play engine even?
You could spend $20 a month to get access to it. You could pretty much, like, if you spend $60, or like, let's say you can put together theoretically, you put together a game in half a year using the Unreal Engine, like a very small game. It could cost you at most, if you're just doing that, $20 or $19 a month, and then 5% of your profits. Which, if you just throw together theoretically, if somebody made like a fucking like dumb Flappy Birds kind of thing, in just in theory, and then released it for $5 and it sold 1 million copies, that person will have given Epic a bunch of money. But it's basically an indie
They didn't have to spend $1,000 up front.
Or a few thousand dollars. Like, they even admitted, they're like, if you wanted to license the Unreal 3 engine from us, it was so shitty. You had to, like, if you wanted to do it, you had to get a lawyer, basically. And this time around, it's going to work more like you're just subscribing to Amazon Prime.
Yeah, and I'm down with that.
Do you see Netflix is going to bring up their prices?
Yeah.
Only just for new subscribers.
Yeah, a dollar for new. Well, but after a year, I think they'll increase it for everybody. I'm thinking. But $1 is not so bad.
That's how they get you, Henry.
I know. Yeah. But yeah. I don't want to watch House of Cards, so I still, I don't know.
So the other big story, new Pokemon game was revealed. Henry.
Yeah.
What the? Did you see this coming?
You know, I didn't, but then when it happened, I thought, oh, yeah, that Pokemon's an annual franchise now. That's just what they do. So, yeah, it's Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, which... Number one, this remake makes me feel old because those were the games that, like, when I had a lull in Pokemon playing, I was like, well, you know, I'm in college now. Maybe I should just take a little break from Pokemon. I don't need to play it on the GBA. And now it's old. Now that's old enough to get remade.
It's kind of heartbreaking.
And these are the GBA games that Ruby and Sapphire, they're... For a time, they were the best-selling Pokemon games ever, but that has since been
replaced.
They're
all kind of the best-selling.
They always were.
This one is like the one that I think the most people haven't played.
I think so, too, yeah.
Despite being one of the best-selling ones, I feel like I don't know anyone who played it.
Yeah, I never played that one.
But it was a great... I mean, it was a lot of fun. One of the interesting things about it is that the main character who you play as, they actually have a father, like... For one, instead of having the mysterious no father situation that's been in all the other ones, he has a dad, and his dad is a gym leader, and you got to fight your dad.
Interesting. Is he the first
story
of
my life?
Seriously, I immediately looked over at Ryan, like I know that he can sympathize with this.
Can't wait to go home in June for a
challenge your gym leader dad.
Your dad better give you a badge. If you
dad, I brought a dog. Bring your armadillo. We're gonna make them fight. Give me your badge.
So the wording on it is slightly interesting to me that they've said that they use like the word epic new world and dramatic new
adventure.
Like, but it's a remake. Like,
how? Yeah, it's the opposite of new. Yeah. If it's a remake, theoretically,
that just seems like wording stuff from the Pokemon Company. I do believe that the next day. Satoru Iwata, the president of Nintendo, when talking about a lot of things, he brought up the Pokemon games and was like, it's a remake. It's a full remake.
But here's the thing. A full remake of a 2D game into a 3D engine with all of the new elements, mm-hmm. considering the fact that it's sort of an era of Pokemon that gets glazed over by most people. I mean, everybody talks about Red and Blue. Most people will be like, yeah, and then I went on and I played a bunch of Gold and Silver. And then everyone jumps to Diamond and Pearl. Like, the Game Boy Advance basically didn't have... Like, some people be like, oh, may have played the remakes on Game Boy Advance, but it's just a game that not a lot of people played. So all of a sudden, it's just like... It's basically a new Pokemon. The only thing that's not new are the Pokemon themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it is... Though, Mega Evolutions open up a lot, and I wrote it in the article when I first wrote it, I thought... Well, will they add Mega Evolutions? Because they gave one of the starters a Mega Evolution in X and Y. And then as people pointed out, which I was very embarrassed I didn't notice, like, those are clearly Mega Evolutions of the legendaries on the cover. Like, on the covers, that's obviously Mega Kyogre and Mega Groudon. Groudon?
Tyranitar and Wailord.
Tyranitar and Wailord, yes. But anyway, I'm excited for it. Definitely, Pokemon is just an annual franchise now. Like they did Black and White 2 year before last. They did X and Y last year. Now it's time for another remake. Probably next year, I would bet we'll see X and Y 2. I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm fine with that. Like a yearly Pokemon game, I have the appetite for that at this moment in time, especially for a series I didn't play. Like I didn't really play. Was Ruby and Sapphire? I also. Well, I want to see, like, the X and Y engine is a really great engine, like, for at least by Pokemon standards. So it will feel brand new anyway to be done again.
Coop made a good point of, like, they need to go all in on the 3D this time because it was annoying to have it flip-flop back and forth.
Yeah, somebody in the comments was arguing with you, Henry, saying that basically you called it a flaw that the 3D was that way, but it wasn't. It was so they could make the prettiest game, and it's like, it worked. If you walked into a fucking cave, some rooms it would work and other rooms it would turn off. It was actively distracting. And if you want them to make a prettier game without 3D, just don't have it be functional at all. Like, there are certain battles it works in and certain battles it doesn't, and certain rooms it works in and certain rooms it doesn't, and it's really distracting.
It's finicky.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, if it, you know, just don't bother with the stereoscopic 3D and just make it look flat, all flat but pretty all the time. I don't know. It said in the trailer, which had virtually no information, at the bottom it had some areas in 3D. Like it mentioned some of the games in 2D, some of the games in 3D, which is like their health warning for it. So that I think it'll probably just work the same as X and Y. This weekend, we will get some of our first footage of it. So by the time you listen to it, we may know more already about the game.
I'd be shocked. It's weird because on the one hand, it's like I'd be shocked if they're really remaking this game in 3D, because at that point, why not just make a new one? But at the same time, I guess all of the remakes, they've had to pretty much start. Yeah. Like, they've had to redraw everything. They've never reused assets in the remakes.
Yeah, Heart Gold and Soul Silver was basically just on the Diamond and Pearl engine.
Yeah, and they have all of the Pokemon rendered already. Like, all 700-whatever Pokemon are rendered in 3D in the current, in X and Y, because they have to be.
Yeah, man, just imagine the grunt work. That's why they put out that Pokemon Viewer thing, the Pokemon 3D, the 3D Pokedex
right.
thing. Just because they had to put so much work into just making 3D character models for 700 Pokemon that they, like, we're not going to be done for a whole nother year. Let's just put this out now so they can look at character models. And lastly, that the game is out in November worldwide.
Woo.
So once again, well, this proves, like, I think international same-day release is the norm now for Pokemon. They're not going to be doing any of this 6 months later BS.
Same with Mario Kart this time, right?
Yeah, Mario Kart is definitely it. But will Smash Brothers be it?
I would be willing to bet Ryan's professional career on it.
Well, they made it pretty clear, though, that Bayonetta 2, Hyrule Warriors, nope. They are summer of this year in Japan.
There's no secrets in those games.
No time.
Nintendo loves the games that they have that have secrets, and both of those games have secrets.
See, I don't. I guess I just don't understand why you'd want to play a Pokemon game every single year. Because for me, they just feel so much the same, but with maybe different Pokemon, or maybe the paths you walk in look different.
But you're also somebody who's like, how much of X and Y did you play?
Like 20 hours or so.
So you're rookie.
Yeah,
But
I stop because there's not really anything. I mean, I guess the main draw is just the catching and battling. But
yeah,
for me, that's usually just not enough to keep me wanting to do that same thing. When especially they're basically the same. I mean, this is going to be the same exact Pokemon you've already caught 100 times.
But I haven't played this
another
one.
Another
so
Pikachu,
I
yay!
So you can walk
shock
on
attack go
path 3 instead of path 7.
Did you know that that Monolith game X is still scheduled for 2014 this year in America?
I'll believe it when I see it. I don't know.
I think we'll
I'm
be
skeptical.
Lucky if it comes out in December in Japan this year.
Like, yeah,
but they have not. I was worried they'd eventually just remove it from their list of Europe of international releases, but it's still on the list for like coming out in Europe.
Yeah, I'm
in
excited
the US.
For that game. I also hopefully there'll be maybe some sort of demo station at E3 this year. That'd be pretty cool.
I would hope so.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Nintendo has to have something.
You guys are gonna find out.
Something.
And the other big story that we missed because for the first fucking time ever we recorded the podcast early, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare is official. There's been a trailer.
Wait, watch this. Intelligence doesn't determine who's right. Power determines who's... I already screwed it up.
Democracy.
I don't think those
Kevin Spacey would have never flubbed that line.
Yeah. He would not. He would do it flawlessly every time.
You're no Kevin Spacey.
I'm
and
actually
that's
pretty excited
where
for
I
it.
Come in.
I thought it looked really cool.
Yeah, I think it looks pretty neat.
I'm excited.
Kevin Spacey was acting up a storm in that. Like, that's what I really like. Kevin Spacey was like, he didn't seem to be phoning it in. Like that they must have paid big money to get Kevin Spacey to put a bunch of blue dots over his face to act.
They totally put a bunch of crap on his face and he just went all in.
Democracy.
Yeah, the speech is really cool.
Democracy is not what these people need. Hell, it's not even what they want. America's been trying to install democracies in nations for a century, and it hasn't worked one time.
Woo.
Super epic.
Ooh.
to disagree with the president.
Have the most basic building blocks to support a democracy.
Jill.
Little things like we ought to be tolerant of those who disagree with us. We ought to be tolerant of those who worship a different god than us. That a journalist ought to be able to disagree with the president.
There you go, Henry.
Disagree with the president. I don't know. He's acting really hard there. I like that. Like, yeah. It is. And it's weird to, you know, funny with this top seven list, what happened, like, that they hire A-level acting movie talent to star in their game.
Like, I feel like if there's a franchise that can sustain it, it's the one that sells like a billion copies a year.
But it is, like, they had hired guys like Gary Oldman and Kiefer Sutherland before, who are movie actors.
But they're not getting them to play. They've always gotten, like, they'll get Gary Oldman and be like, Gary Oldman, you're playing a Russian guy with a face covered in scars, and we want you to just grunt out your lines. This is the first time where they're like you said, they're covering his face with ping pong balls and kicking him into a room and telling him to basically do a full performance.
Be Kevin Spacey.
You're Kevin Spacey. Star in this.
Go.
I saw a quote from Game Informer interview that, like, the creators of the game, they want Kevin Spacey, they want his character to play that game in the next season of House of Cards. They're like, oh man, we hope he does, because I don't know if you guys know, in the show, one of the things about Frank Underwood is that he plays video games.
He plays Killzone, specifically.
He also played God of War, which tells me that Sony gave him a little money.
Probably.
To the
Actually, I'm catching up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Patton Oswalt is in a few episodes.
Yeah.
And there's this, and he lives in like a bunker. And the guys, and Agent Coulson walks up and he's like, so what do you do here? He's like, oh, you know, I hang out, been catching up on reading, play a lot of video games. I play Call of Duty with my brother. You play Call of Duty? And Coulson's like, yeah, a ton. I just haven't had a chance recently. And then they just move on. And I loved it because it was like, neither of them, it didn't feel like it was one of those typical TV, like, oh, yes, of course I play it. I want to fit in. But Coulson was like, yeah, of course. Like, everybody at S.H.I.E.L.D. plays video games. And the fact that they specifically name dropped Call of Duty made me very happy.
It wasn't like some of those very ham fisted Breaking Bad.
No, I'm standing up and playing Rage with a Gun Con. No, it just felt like a genuine thing that those two characters would have discussed.
I remember on Breaking Bad, they had one of the most terrible product placements I thought they had was that, well, like the Walt Jr., like, he is the breakfast eater. That's his character.
Mm-hmm. He loves breakfast.
He loves eating breakfast. And then in like second season, he has this line of like, Mom, you bought Raisin Bran. You bought Raisin Bran and not Raisin Bran Crunch. Raisin Bran Crunch is totally different from Raisin Bran, and I love Raisin Bran Crunch. I was like, this is a long discussion of a very specific brand. Anyway, but Advanced Warfare.
Advanced Warfare. That's what we kept on saying.
I bet you, if you looked through all of the articles we wrote about it, we slipped up once. Yeah.
Not us. We don't make mistakes.
Yeah, Ryan Lucas and I went through that trailer like
I must
with a fine tooth comb.
Yeah,
and yeah, the game's it's set in like
2054.
Yeah, like 50 years later. 50 years from now.
40. So,
40 years from now. What year is it?
Forty years from now.
It's actually like
four decades.
All the technology and stuff they use is all kinds of advanced stuff. Which I also wrote Lucas and I wrote an article about the future tech that's in it,
which is shockingly close to reality.
Yeah, it all turns out that all of these things, like the exoskeleton suits that they're wearing, even like the crazy ass body armor, are actual things that are like
being made. My favorite part:
Barack Obama announced the Iron Man suit like in February.
So, I liked when Lorenzo and I spent a good like 20 minutes just watching real life rail guns slap the cement. And it's just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. God, I missed out by not being here for that.
Yeah, it was cool.
They're taking the day off.
Yeah. It was really neat.
But all that future tech is like real stuff that's going to happen eventually. Maybe not the spider tanks. I don't know if that's going to be a real thing.
I thought the spider tanks were in Watch Dogs.
I don't know.
So the spider tank is Watch Dogs, yes, but then there's like a quadrupedal tank.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Advanced Warfare.
There's all kinds of
crazy
stuff.
I'm excited for this one. I didn't hate Ghosts. But I wasn't excited for it pre-release. Yeah. Like, the trailers did nothing for me. This trailer definitely gets me excited. And it's a studio that has never made a Call of Duty. Like, they've helped on multiplayer, but they've never made their own Call of Duty before. And that's really exciting to me.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the new gameplay potential of this is, like, it could be like Titanfall, where, you know, you're the super-powered soldier. You saw him climbing up walls with, like, sticky Spider-Man hands and doing all kinds of... Yeah, gross. Doing all kinds of like parkour stuff in your shooter. So and they're all jumping like 30 feet in the air too.
They're basically like, if they want to, and they might, they could be like, oh yeah, Titanfall has parkour and you can call down a mech that you can ride in. What if you are the mech and you can parkour?
Yeah.
It's basically them just meeting halfway.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. But I'm really excited. I think it looks really neat.
All Kevin Spacey's talk about PMCs and long speech, like, I was like, this feels like a Metal Gear game.
It's very Metal Gear.
You know what's interesting
to me? Some fundamentalist religious principles, drop a few bombs, topple a dictator, and start a democracy?
Religious principles.
What's interesting to me is that I really feel like Infinity Ward went from the A developer of Call of Duty to the C developer of Call of Duty.
Like, everyone left.
No, I totally get that. But it's just like, I think Treyarch actually really stepped up, like, especially with Black Ops 2. Like, I really liked Black Ops 2.
Yeah, and they just kind of put this whole zombies thing into it that everybody else is trying
to copy. What was interesting to me was when I went to see Black Ops 2 at Treyarch's office, they were doing something very similar to what Sledgehammer is doing in that, like, well, what if we took this very real thing that exists now and then just, you know, followed it through to a very possible scenario?
Right.
You know, so it's like our big drone army is hacked and not kidnapped, but taken over by
princesses.
Extremists or whatever.
Just an army of princesses.
But now, this is like, you know, you hear a little bit about real life PMCs. Obviously, Metal Gear talks a lot about PMCs. Mm-hmm. But now to see, and there's a really interesting video that I think Activision teamed up with Vice to do about just PMCs, and they're like, you may not know this, but take the top 10 most profitable corporations on the entire planet, and a PMC is like number 2.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's like number 2 or 3.
It's like right behind Walmart.
And that, yeah, and it's it was number 3. Because then it's like, you see McDonald's, and McDonald's is like a tenth of what this PMC makes.
Yeah,
And it's just like,
that's pretty frightening.
Well, the one thing weird.
Well, that's really weird that, like, Activision, one of the scariest corporations in video games, is like teaming up with Vice.
I mean, the scariest corporation in video games still makes video
games. Yeah, yeah. I was just like, it's not scary.
But it's weird. But that's just kind of a weird anti-corporate big business message.
But it was really interesting. Like, I definitely encourage you. I'm sure you'll find a link to that video I'm talking about on the Call of Duty trailer on Activision's channel or whatever.
Yeah, there's just a ton of like money and military stuff. We were watching that railgun video,
that
and they're
insane.
They're like, look at this slug, and the slug is like a
fucking cinder block,
like a 6-inch block, like 6x4-inch block that they shoot out of this cannon. They're like, this is just the prototype thing, and it shoots through like 4 sheets of metal like in one shot. And then they showed like one of the real bullets that'll take out a nuclear missile. And, you know, it's probably about a foot and a half long, and they're like, this is the cheapest projectile. this is just, like, so inexpensive. It's ridiculous. It's 100 times less expensive. And they're like, how much is this thing? It's like, $25,000.
100 times less expensive than one of our regular cruise missiles.
Yeah.
Is what
we're
he's
like,
saying.
Holy shit.
We were talking about that last week on the show, about everything that the reason that the military costs so much isn't necessarily because they're paying soldiers a lot of money. Because, like, the
missiles.
Person holding an Xbox controller and a drone that's shooting missiles, every time he hits the A button, it costs America the amount of a college tuition.
But real quick, before we move on to one of the interesting, they were interviewing people who are part of PMCs, and they're like, "Why did you do this?" And this guy had been a part of the U.S. Army, and he's like, "Everybody who's was good in the U.S. Army no longer works for the United States government because why would I spend a 4-year tour in Iraq and make like I forget the number he mentioned? It was like
he said like 40K a year.
Yeah,
or something.
It was like $30,000 or $40,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And he goes, when I can make $400,000 in 1 year working for a PMC." And it's just like, fuck.
It's a sad secret of military service that, like, they pay soldiers shit. Like, everybody talks up supporting the troops and respecting them and all that, and you should, but the government maybe not doing the best job of supporting
those troops. I mean, it's tax-free.
Yeah, okay, fine. It's tax-free money.
Basically,
so.
Like 30% more than that, which is still not enough.
Yeah, that's
you
still
get like the GI Bill.
$45K
to go to school.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, they're carrying around rocket launchers that are worth like 10 of them.
Yeah. If you drop that rocket launcher, you've basically fired your friend. Hopefully not literally.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but yeah, Advanced
stuff.
Warfare.
Yeah.
Looks pretty neat. I didn't expect them to call it Advanced Warfare, though.
It's kind of a lazy name.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
I mean, kind of like the blacksmith rumor better.
Give me a break.
It's no laser.
I need to isolate that as a sound clip.
There we go.
It's no laser than Modern Warfare, and I think that's totally fine. Like,
I mean,
people get used to it pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's lazy because of Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
Because
it's also very much in line with their naming scheme. Like,
yeah.
People
makes sense.
Need
Black
a
Ops
who can give them both the support and the constraints to keep chaos at bay. You give them that. And they'll follow.
Ready?
And that's where I come in.
The best is that he's, like, doing an interview, and it very obviously seems like that last line is supposed to be they can't hear it, and it's basically like, Henry, come on, I'll give you a drive home. It'll be the last ride you take.
What? Oh, nothing.
Don't worry about it. Don't, it's
what?
All cool.
Wait, what was that?
No,
that?
No. Oh. Still the same place, right? Cool.
Because my it's funny, because my impression of that scene in the trailer is he's talking to, like, journalists or something.
Yeah. I mean, I have my recorders on. Oh, this is off the record.
Yeah, the people listening in that trailer are just obviously not evil executives of this crazy PNC company.
Maybe he corrects. He's like, oh, I said that's where I go spin. That's where my spin class is.
Yeah.
I was looking out the window.
I have a spin class in Greece. Yeah. It's a country that's currently involved in a war. I like to spin.
Oh, this is awkward.
You give them spin, oh, they'll follow.
Come on, ladies. Is that all you got? Wow, all I could picture now is Kevin Spacey leading a spin class.
And Henry, did you just make that weird noise from the trailer? Like, that's just the spin wheels.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So that's it for the new announcements from this week. Plenty of other stuff happening in the next few weeks, it looks like, with pre-E3 ramping up. No previews as far as I can tell. No.
Mm-hmm.
But we got two reviews,
Three
reviews, sort of. are reviewing up for Sports Friends, which I played a bunch of.
Cool, I haven't played it.
Tell me
about it.
Sports Friends is basically like really low rent very small mini games.
Lo-fi
mini games. Very pixelated, like looking not even like almost looking like an NES game in HD. Some of them are a little more advanced.
One doesn't even have visuals.
One does not. If you watched our live streams ever, you may have seen us play Johann Sebastian Joust, which is a game that you hold either a PlayStation Move or a DualShock controller as Johann Sebastian plays, and then you have to walk around the room slowly trying to knock the controlers out of your friend's hands.
I love that. Yeah,
it's really so fun. Another one is Super Pole Riders, which is you're trying to pole vault while hitting a ball, like kicking a ball that's on a string to your enemy's goal, or you can just like dive kick them with the pole vault. There's also one that's like
Bari Bali,
it's basically
the best one.
It's really, I think Super Pole Rider might be my favorite. Oh. But Bari Bali is really good. It's kind of like, it's almost a little tiny bit like Smash Brothers, because there's like four characters, each of whom has two abilities. You can choose one to go into, and you can punch your enemies. But the goal is actually to grab what looks kind of like a volleyball and throw it into their goal, which is your goal, which is just water behind them. Like, you're playing basically hovering above a lake, and if it goes off the screen, that counts as a point. But you can like jump and grab the ball and jump back up, but you're surrounded by little dots that let you know how many jumps you have before you run out. So it's a lot of, like, you punch your enemy, you throw the ball into their thing, you punch them off the side, so they grab the ball and try to double jump to get back up without running out of their jumps. It's really, really simple, but very, very fun. And then there's another one which I haven't been able to play yet because it's only four players. And there's two hidden games.
Oh, wow.
There's Get On Top, which is...
It's a classic
where it's basically just you and somebody else holding hands. And you have to pull, you have to, and you're just, as soon as it starts, you're just going to start like pushing forward. So you're pushing into each other, and you need to get them to like pull back for a second so you can like launch yourself on top of them. And I don't know what the other one is. It's cheap. It's on PSN. I personally recommend it if you're going to have someone to play it with. So there's no single player
content. See, this is the perfect kind of game for like when I go back to visit my friends because they're always looking for cool stuff to play. Like, because we all like to sit around drinking and catching up and playing goofy games.
Hanging out with Alan Cohall.
Alan is often a part of our party. But no, this is exactly the perfect kind of game for some kind of setting like that.
I like how the mini game names are very suggestive.
Super Pole Rider
and
Get on Top. Yeah, I think Super Pole Rider and Get on Top are made by the same person. I don't know if he made all of them. I think it's a collaboration.
Yeah, it is. It's a collaborative.
But
it's also a Kickstarter success story.
Yeah. Ryan, your name in the credits.
This is the only game I've kickstarted. I think it's the only one I've ever kickstarted.
It's very fun. I played Johann Sebastian Joust, even just with two people. It's just fun. Even two people sitting on a couch, it's fun. Because it's just you kind of slowly trying to shove the other person. Like, I want to play it with more people.
I just think it's a hilarious concept. Like, it's first of all, it's a cool concept for a game that makes really good use of the motion control stuff. But also, how funny is it that Johann Sebastian is what's playing in the background while you?
Well, the thing that makes the game different is the music is playing slowly, and when it's playing slowly most of the time. But every so often, it will start playing quickly, and when it's playing quickly, the tolerance for movement is up. So if you're just slowly trying to push the person, and then the music kicks up, you still can't like shake your controller like crazy, but you can like run across the room if you keep your hand balanced.
That's funny.
It's ridiculous.
It's a good rumpus room.
Rumpus room. Yeah. What do we give it?
Four out of five.
Four out of five. Yeah, it basically doesn't function if you're alone, unless you want to try to play Johann Sebastian Joust with your left hand versus your right hand. But
that would be
and
sad.
It's local co-op only.
Yeah,
there's no online
multiplayer
for this.
Super fun.
Yeah.
And The Amazing Spider-Man 2, what score did we give that?
I think we gave that a 3.
Yeah, and you played a few hours?
From the 2 hours I played, I did it on the live stream with Ryan. I played just a tiny bit more after that. But yeah, it's just, okay, so they get Spider-Man swinging around all right. Like, the swinging action's okay.
See, Rich, who reviewed it for us, said that like the mobility is one of the biggest issues he had with the game.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't... You know, you shouldn't have to worry. You're a freaking superhero. You should be able to, like, swing through the city, no problem. But he's like, and I just kept smashing into buildings or getting caught in weird angles.
I feel like that game should be almost like Assassin's Creed, where, like, even if you screw up, the game makes it look cool.
It
should be one of those things where, like, if you smack into a building, he should just, like, run on the wall and jump off immediately. Like, it should be a very seamless thing.
Well, I think that would take a little more design finesse than the Amazing Spider-Man 2 has in it. Like, it all... I would say sloppy is the right word for Amazing Spider-Man 2. That it's like, it looks like it has high enough production values, but like the combat in it is just, it wants to be an Arkham game but can't pull it off. Like the fights just don't feel the same, and just you fight so many generic. It's just such a generic world. Like it lacks a lot of the personality that you would hope to see. And like, I'm a man in a red and blue suit swinging around a city, but I'm just beating up the same like bandana faced idiots all the time, or like walking.
I feel like that should be a racial slur if it's not.
Or walking through a fiery building, or even when you fight like just to fit in the movie universe, like they bring in the Shocker. He's the first boss fight you have, but the Shocker is just so lame. Like, he's just a dude with gloves, no real costume,
puffy jacket.
Yeah, a puffy jacket. Just
that
a dude
is
in a puffy
stupid.
Jacket.
And one smelly finger.
It also just sucks that it's stuck in the Spider-Man world, and the movie world's just boring by comparison to the comic book world. And that they didn't even pay. Like, it's cheap enough that, like, it stars the people who appear in the film, but they did not pay for any of the likenesses. Gwen, Peter, Aunt May, Electro... None of them or Harry Osborn. Nobody looks like
I really
themselves.
Feel like they need to do something with like movie contracts where it's like, hey, you're getting paid X amount of money, and also in the official video game we make, we get your likeness.
Yeah,
it feels like that should be something.
They'd probably just say like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Well,
but obviously they don't.
Well, and then it gets extra ridiculous. Like, they bring in comic book elements that weren't in the first movie. Like, I remember I got to meet with the developers, and one of their points was, that some people in the first with the first Amazing Spider-Man game complained that you had lame villains to fight. It was just the Lizard again and nobody else. So they said, well, this time not only are we going to have Electro from the movie, but we'll also have the Shocker, and we'll have Kingpin and Kraven the Hunter. But Kingpin and Kraven the Hunter do not fit with the world. Like, you saw in that opening scene, Ryan, where, like, Harry Osborn is talking to the Kingpin in the Kingdom. Kingpin is about 4 feet taller than him, and his hand, like, has gigantism. His hand is bigger than Harry's head.
He shakes his finger.
Yeah, he shakes his finger. And it's like, that is true to the comics, but this is supposed to be in a more real world. It's just, it's silly.
Yeah,
it's just
silly. A little weird. But anyway, it sounds like a mostly shallow game that still has some fun gameplay to it every now and then.
If you love Spider-Man and it was $20, I'd say it might be worth it, but yeah.
But probably not. Mm. And what's the third thing?
Bound by Flame, which we can talk about real quick.
I'm interested.
I've played about 2 hours of it. You know, it was interesting. The reviews across all the various sites came in very, very differently. There was ranging from like 3 up to, I think Game Informer gave it like an 8. And we gave it a 3.5. So
out of 5.
7, yeah. I'd say I agree with everything our reviewer said. It's basically a B grade game because it's only like $30. I think it's $30 or $40.
Fair enough.
It's definitely a budget game, and I think I was talking to Tyler Wilde from at PC Gamer about it a bit, and he brought up a very good point that it's very obviously a budget game in the sense that they handle their low budget in very poor ways. So, for example, there will be crucial elements to the plot, like cutscenes, but they just didn't have the resources to animate it or include some sort of scene. So they fade to black and then fade back in where it's like, and now some crucial things happen during that time. And ouch. Now you're expected to just, you know, run with it. And it's like, that's kind of weird.
That's awesome.
But it's actually, I thought it looked kind of cool, and I really like the combat is really fun from what I've played of it. It sometimes feels a little cheap, and enemies are really fucking hard.
Mm. I would say, looking at 2 of the screenshots on Amazon, the 2 screenshots in a row are just people running away from monsters.
Yeah, they're really tough. Giancarlo, our reviewer, said it was... He didn't use any Dark Souls comparison, but he said it's like you really have to learn what they're doing and how to dodge it. Dodging and blocking stuff is really just like a one button press thing, so it's just kind of like more of a twitch reaction thing than anything else, I would say. But the combat's fun, and I think the crafting system is really cool because when you can add buffs and stuff through the crafting. But it entirely changes little elements of the equipment that you're wearing. So, like on a sword.
So you see it.
Yeah, it's really cool because you'll see the individual crafting elements you added to a weapon. Like on a sword, you can see like the different pommels that you've equipped or the changes to the, what is that? The guard thing. Uh-huh. I don't know
what parts of a sword are called.
Cross guard? Is that what they call
it? But you can see how these change, and it's really kind of neat looking from a visual standpoint. But yeah, it's just a, you know, a B-grade game that's a decent action RPG. Nothing too crazy. And we gave that a 3.5 out of 5.
All right, so that's it for the reviews this week. We have some big ones going up next week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited to see everyone's reaction to those. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, the community segment. Welcome back to the third and final segment of Radio Radar, episode 88. Before we get into the new question of the week and the answers from last week, we do have a lot of corrections.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. I was afraid of this part.
Corrections.
You screwed up. Sunny D says, when one of you, I'm pretty sure it was Henry, was talking about the Amazing Spider-Man 2 post plans, you forgot to mention the Amazing Spider-Man 3 and the Amazing Spider-Man 4 were planned for 2016 and 2018, respectively.
Those plans have changed, though, I think. I think now it's...
Corrections!
You screwed up. Bladed Falcon says, hey, Ryan... When you were talking about Game of Thrones, no one ever says the king in the Westeros.
The king in the Westeros?
That's apparently something you said. It's the king in the north in the instance you were using.
Oh, my bad.
Do we normally do?
Every time you guys talk about Smash Brothers, you screw up more, according to God.
All right.
See, it's the same thing where it's people don't actually only play Final Destination. Henry specifically, Marth is widely accepted as better than Roy. You said Roy was better than Marth. You said the Ice Climbers are bad, but they're actually up there in the thanks to their insane grab game.
Well,
and,
yeah, I found that out recently in Evo, but.
And Plain Like Vanilla says that I said Resident Evil 6 was the best-selling Resident Evil game, but it's actually Resident Evil 5. Or 5 sold 6.5 million, 6 sold 5.2 million. That's it. Listen, we're humans, just like the rest of you, and we screw up
half the time, one leg of pants at a time. Half the time we're just like...
We're joking.
We're just riffing off of stuff.
We have to keep saying things. You gotta fill dead air. Would you rather us just be all quiet for like 5 seconds
while we check it on Wikipedia?
Please continue to send in your corrections. Please do.
All right. So, question of the week from last week: what would be the worst location for a Call of Duty game? I'll go the first one, and I'll pass it around. EAC73. First of all, he appreciates your effort in trying to get me to play the super horn sound effect, Henry.
Thank you.
The worst setting would be post-World War II Germany. You'd basically be a bunch of guys waiting for the Nazis to pop up again. The only thing that could make this game any good would be the discovery of ancient alien technology that the Nazis had, but that's more for a History Channel's Nazis UFO game.
Oh, boy.
Ratsies.
Extapalatopotamus says, the worst setting for a Call of Duty would definitely be inside someone's colon.
Is this the new format? I'm excited by this. Super Giraffe says, dinosaur times, because we'd just be lemurs or some shiz and couldn't use any guns. Also, dinosaurs can't use guns.
Very true.
Lemurs are some shiz.
Good observation.
Oh, great. I get the long one. Quicksand. A Call of Duty
Who said it?
BKO said it. Quicksand. A Call of Duty set entirely in quicksand would be a garbage game. Think about it. Are you the run and gun sort? Well, you can't because you're in quicksand. and if you try to run, you'll just sink faster. You like to find a good vantage point and snipe from above? Well, you can't because you're in quicksand, and there's no way to steady your person, much less your scope. Maybe you like to just be a good teammate and provide reinforcements in order to help achieve team-based objectives. Well, guess what? The objective is to get out alive, and the entire world is made of quicksand, and there's no escape. You're just wasting your time. Call it an airstrike? Can't. The bomb will sink into quicksand. Its detonation hopelessly muted by stacks and stacks of quicksand, drowning its might. For every strategy, there's an immortal enemy that feels nothing, stops at nothing, cares not how you die and how long it takes. Quicksand. Want your $60 back? Sorry, no refunds. Consider that a sunk cost.
Oh, business cards.
God damn.
All right, and I think there's
that's
one
the last
more.
One
nope.
Oh, okay.
There's two more.
So we go round robin.
We're going round robin. There
Shelby
were a lot of good
Billion
ones.
Says, the worst setting for a Call of Duty game would be the firearm convention. Every time you turn a corner, someone would be complaining, you know, that's not actually how a FAMAS is reloaded. No one would ever cover an M16 in gold plating. That would totally give away your position. Dude, that weapon would never be used at a range in real life. Please read in the most over-the-top fanboy coop voice. Sorry.
You should have put that at the beginning. I forgot about that. And the last one was from Cyber Ninja. The Games Radar office, I would hate to see the cookie wall destroyed because of warfare. And Shasta responded, this. Also, the final boss is Zach, who is still hiding under his desk. So the winner question of the week this year is definitely BKO. With his response on quicksand, send a message to RadioRadar@GamesRadar.com. If we owe you a prize from recent weeks that we have not sent, send another message. We're still figuring all that out.
If you want him, come and claim.
Yes. New question of the week. Nintendo has confirmed that they are moving further into NFC/Skylanders/ Disney Infinity territory with
toys to life stuff.
What franchises would you like to see get that treatment from Nintendo or otherwise? I'm going to go first. I'm going to say Mass Effect. Not only would you have the multiplayer benefits, but you'd be able to carry over saves between games with high-quality figurines and mix and match. Like, let's say you lost Rex in one of your games. Just trade with one of your friends who lost a different character. And suddenly Rex is back in your game.
But your Shepard would never look like you.
I would like to see this happen to the UFC games. Because
they already have those derpy-looking UFC figures.
It's one thing to just make them beat each other up in the game, but if, like, maybe you could have some sort of toy that even changes colors or something depending on your health while you're fighting. I don't know. It'd just be kind of neat to be like, I have Roy Nelson. Now I'm going to put him in my little Skylanders box. And now here he is fighting.
UFC theme song.
I hate that song.
It's terrible.
What was the
that
official
song sounds like an Affliction t-shirt.
What was that? Was it Slim Jim? That's the official snack of the UFC?
I believe corn it's nuts. Corn Nuts, the official corn-flavored snack of the UFC, I believe.
Sorry. Sponsored by Bud Light, the worst beer on the planet.
Do they still have Insight? That they advertise them.
They have Zenergy time. Powered by Zions.
That's okay. Right.
That's yeah. The worst fucking slogan I've ever heard in my life.
Well, I'm going to stick with Nintendo.
Wow!
Line, but
wow!
We're going round robin? Okay, Lucas, you got it.
Oh, like we do every podcast.
That's not true.
Really? Like, just last week, I bet I'm the first person who replied last week.
No kidding.
Go, Lucas.
I would do Jump All-Stars.
What is that?
It's that Shonen Jump thing in Japan that they never bring over here. But it'd be crazy cool because you could just take the best, you know, manga has to offer and make them toys.
As in Goku versus Rurouni Kenshin versus
Naruto
versus
I should have said
Elite.
Dragon Ball
Sasuke.
Z. Yeah.
Sasuke.
You missed that one.
Yeah, but for that to be good, there'd have to be good Dragon Ball Z games.
That's true.
Oh. All right.
Dragon.
From the
Dragon Balls.
That's not the theme song in the original.
Well, then it's a worse show for it.
So do you have the Japanese theme song on those?
Yeah, it's that's all.
Yeah,
it is.
They say an English phrase in it that I can't remember. Oh, okay, let's hear this real quick. I gotta remember the words.
Fly away.
Oh, I have an important update regarding my Dragon Ball Z watch.
Yes. It's your weekly update.
I am finally starting the Cell saga.
Oh,
yes.
All right.
It's a good saga, but it's where DBZ goes downhill.
No way. That's, Cell's the best.
Yeah, I just said it's a good. Best. I'm saying that is the
after,
beginning of the end.
After that,
the peak. Yeah.
All right, Henry.
I wanted to listen to that. Let's
a long theme song.
Yeah.
Allah, Henshala. When I've sung in Japanese in Tokyo karaoke bars, like two times I've done it. Both times the Japanese fanboys, like the otaku that came with us, they wanted to sing this theme song. This was their number one theme song.
Hold on, I got this part of the in the video. In the video, there's just like, what if we just did an incredible close up on cleavage? Check this, Ryan.
I'm watching.
Look at this.
Yep.
Oh, hold on. Let's go earlier.
Bulma.
Ready. Cleavage.
Yeah. Weird.
Buruma.
That translates well to radio.
All right, guys. my pick is a Nintendo Focus One, but not just a Mario toy. Though I can't wait to own a lot more Mario toys with
there
this
you
NFC
go.
System, but. I was trying to think of a game. The Fire Emblem series really invests you in a certain character, and so I think that would really carry over into a good NFC game. Like, you would just own your Marth or whoever, and that would be your specific Marth that you would level up the way you want them to.
That'd be really cool.
Which you already do in Fire Emblem games, but now they would be stuck to your toy.
And then, based on Nintendo's announcement, you say, you know what, I'm going to pick this toy up. I'm going to put my copy of Smash Brothers in, and I'm going to put my Marth back down. Because the thing that Nintendo said is the NFC is going to transfer between games on the same figure. Shared save experience or something.
Well, because they can all talk. The NFC is not to a specific game. They can all talk to the gamepad. So as long as it's a Wii U game, you can talk to it.
Nintendo for like a year has been like, yep, we're working on NFC stuff, and we just haven't heard anything. apparently this E3.
Let's real quick.
Let's wait until we have one person left who has to do their thing.
Wait, can I preempt my correction? I think it's Jump Superstar. That's all.
Okay, that's fine. Lorenzo?
Mine would be Star Wars.
Okay. Anyway, so Ryan, what were you saying?
I'm just saying I'm really excited for E3 this year.
Me too. Here's the thing I was thinking about yesterday based on, so Nintendo, this is something we didn't talk about in the news section. Nintendo has said that they're going to explore licensed territory like never before. I think that this might be, and Henry wrote a really good article yesterday about different paths out of bankruptcy that Nintendo can take. There's one that we didn't discuss, which is investing like crazy into its brands. Mm-hmm. Mario is really popular. But I'd say that Mario is more popular than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by a fair margin.
Yeah.
Walk into Target. Aisles of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toys. Everywhere you go in any toy store, tons of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles board games, videos, several TV shows, another movie.
It's real depressing because I wish I had all those toys.
If Nintendo decided, like Nintendo has several brands that have the potential to be that popular, they're being like, well, Mario's our video game guy, we'll sell t-shirts or whatever, but he's our video game.
We don't want to sell toys.
If they go all in on like, well, new cartoon, new movie, theoretically, like a CG fun movie, if they go all in on trying to increase their brands, 2 years from now, when there's a much bigger Mario TV series than ever and tons of toys and a new Mario game comes out, people are going to want to buy the system to play it on.
Man, could you imagine a Mario TV show just be like, wah!
Well, I would hope Charles Martinet would... Well, I don't know. If Charles Martinet did the voice, like, that would be so grating.
Yeah. Wait, play the
good old Captain Lou Albano. Yeah.
Play the Super Mario 3.
Man, Marios are dropping like flies. Charles Martinet better be like in stasis somewhere, because there have been two Marios that have died in the last 10 years.
I mean, he's an aging guy.
The best part of this video is the end when he does like the just like that. He honestly looks like he almost falls. Ryan, watch this. You ready? It's gonna happen. Well, first of all, he had to run to the background. The song is great.
Come on now, so just like that.
He's toes.
Those weren't good. Yeah. To watch them now, they're not good, but I think that I'm really surprised that it's taken Nintendo this long to learn this lesson, because, like, I would say in America at least, Pokemon wouldn't have exploded half as big as it did if not for that cartoon. The anime got so many kids into Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the anime was made to teach kids to play Pokemon.
Yeah, and if
it's an indoctrination tool.
Nintendo could easily do a Nickelodeon show for... They could honestly do, like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles style, like CG fun show for Metroid or Zelda or
Raving
Mario.
Raving Rabbids is doing it right
now. Yeah, Raving Rabbids is successful
and
enough.
That show is hilarious.
It is, but that that garbage looking, like, they're making a sequel to Pac-Man's Ghostly Adventures because apparently the show is doing well enough. If that show can succeed, Nintendo can make a Mario show work.
Well, though now Sonic is going to, he's going to have a show like
Here's what they
earlier,
do.
Yeah.
Here's what you do. You make it based on Super Mario 3. And you make it all the Muppet Show style, where it's them setting up their show every episode.
That would be cool.
Anyway. So, yeah. Leave us your answer to the question of the week. What franchise would you like to see get the NFC treatment, and why? We're going to read some of our favorites next week and give one of them a prize.
Mm.
So, that's it. Thanks for listening. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and review us on iTunes. Anyone have anything they need to plug?
HENEREYG on Twitter. That's my Twitter handle. Go to it. Subscribe to me, buddies.
And wait, will that video that we've been working on be live?
I don't know.
Nope. Never mind.
Nope.
Bye.
Get ready to watch.